little ones, the Sleep Manual podcast. Welcome to our podcast, The Sleep Manual, where we talk constantly and passionately about your baby or toddler's sleep. We have new episodes out every single week, so make sure you follow us to get notified when those new ones come out. I'm Nikki, and I'm here with Amanda, my little one's co-founder.
Hi.
If you need a hand with your baby's sleep at any age or stage, we'd love you to visit us at littleones.co and we can solve any sleep challenge you might be facing. In today's episode, we are going to discuss some old wives' tales you will probably have heard and look at whether there is any truth to them. Dun, dun, dun. Ooh, I love topics like this because it gives us a chance to sink our teeth into some of the big mistruths that float around out there. There is a lot. Like, we have definitely, especially in our line of work, heard all of these, and we're going to call them old wives' tales because a lot of them are, and it's things that your grandparents would give you advice about parenting. It's that kind of stuff. It's like, oh, you should do this because it will definitely help with this, and we're going to have a look at whether there is actually any truth. Some of them hold truth and a lot of wisdom. Some are definitely old wives' tales. We're going to focus specifically on the sleep side of it today. So stick with us. And there are some little nuggets of really good advice and information in there. Okay, the first one, Amanda.
Here it comes.
Old wives' tale, OWT. Number one. If you want your baby to sleep through the night, give them a bit of rice cereal before bedtime.
Nope. Yes. So just no.
Don't do that.
Don't do that one. good. So, moving on. Sleeping through the night is dependent on so many other factors, all right? So many other factors than just a little bit of rice cereal, you know?
Have a look at what those other factors are, Amanda.
Yeah. So, those other factors are their daytime sleep could be too much, or it even could be too little. Their awake windows are going to be potentially too long, or they could be too short, and that obviously means that they're sleeping more or less during the day. Their sleep environment could be off and could be just waking them up super early in the morning, or maybe there's noise, or maybe there's a nightlight above their bed, or there's a musical mobile going around that they're staring at.
Or it's just too bright.
Or it's just generally too bright. And also, after 3-4 months of age, we need to look at their ability to settle themselves to sleep. Because if they cannot settle themselves to sleep, when they wake in the middle of the night, which they will do, they need to be able to get back to sleep by themselves without calling out for you.
So, and rice cereal is not going to solve that.
No. Surprisingly, it's not.
Rice cereal is not going to make the room darker, or it's not going to make your baby's awake windows more age appropriate, and it's not going to make sure they're having the right amount of daytime sleep. Rice cereal is not all it's jacked up to be, it seems.
Yes, it might sustain them for a tiny bit longer than what just normal milk would, but this is not going to help your baby sleep through the night. And you also need to make sure that you're giving your solids at an age-appropriate time when they are ready for solids. You know, you can't be giving an 8-week-old rice cereal because you hope it might help them sleep through the night. And also, we don't recommend, even when you are starting solids, to start at dinner time. Mm. We generally would suggest to actually start at lunchtime so that they are able to process the new foods and get used to things before you go to sleep.
It's not the end of the day and they're not overtired already and cranky and kind of over it all.
And
when you do first start solids, they're not having much food anyway.
No.
Like, it's not a large enough quantity that it's going to make this massive impact to their nighttime sleep. And if you are feeding them at dinner time, if your little one has reached the age they're having solids at dinner time, you know, you're feeding them a good couple hours before they're going to sleep. You don't want them to have solids going into their body immediately before they sleep, because they're digesting and that can interrupt their sleep. So that is an old wives' tale that is better left in the past, that one.
Sure is.
Just say no. Say no to the rice cereal before bed. No, Grandma. All right.
All right, let's look at
next one.
Let's look at old wives' tale number two. This is a good one. Rocking your baby to sleep will spoil them and make it harder for them to sleep on their own. All right, Nikki.
Do you know, I hate the word spoil.
Yeah.
You know, like, nothing you do to a baby, nothing is spoiling the baby. Spoiling implies, like, ruining. You're not ruining the baby. This old wives' tale, however, does have an element of truth to it. So I don't agree with the spoil element.
No.
But it is true that if you continue to rock your baby to sleep beyond a certain age, it is going to be harder for them to sleep on their own. That is an absolute truth because, as Amanda briefly touched on in the previous old wives' tale, they are not learning to put themselves to sleep or self-settle, which means that when they're waking naturally between those sleep cycles overnight, they're going to need you for 2 hours to come in and rock them back to sleep. And so that definitely, rocking your baby to sleep is potentially causing further problems down the track. It doesn't mean you've spoiled them. It just means that you've got some sleep habits to undo a bit later on. So if you're rocking your newborn baby to sleep, fine, it's probably not interfering with their sleep. If your little one is around 4 months and over and you're still rocking them to sleep, you might have noticed that they're waking a lot more overnight because they want that rocking. They're waking up and it's not there and they need it back. So if you're in that situation and you think you're looking to move away from rocking your baby to sleep, have a look at our website, littleones.co, or download our app, because we have so many methods in there. And in actual fact, we have a method specifically for rocked to sleep babies. Cool. Yeah, it's called the rocked to sleep method, shockingly, to help your little one learn to go to sleep without needing the rocking. So that's an old wives tale, which, yeah, there is a bit of truth to that one. So the old wives knew a bit of something about a bit of something.
But you can definitely still spoil your baby by rocking them to sleep every now and again. Like, if your baby is sleeping really well, you know, who cares? Spoil them. Yeah. Ruin them.
Yeah. But just don't give them chocolates to spoil.
Or rice cereal.
Oh. All right, Amanda, here it comes. Old wives tale. Do you know at some point we're going to be old wives? I've just realised that. Maybe we already are old wives.
We are old wives already. God.
Emotionally prepared for that. All right, old wives tale number three. You'll love this one because it's your favourite one.
Favourite.
Drooling. Here it comes. Drooling and shoving things in the mouth is always teething.
Always. No, it is not always.
It's always not teething.
It's always not teething. In fact, shoving things in their mouth is them getting used to solids and actually using their touch and their taste and using their different senses to explore the world. So they are finding that toy or whatever they're doing and holding it and putting it in their mouth, because that's also a sense that they are learning of what to do with their bodies and find everything out. Yeah. So,
and also, if you think about the age that they start doing this, it's around that age that they start intentionally grabbing stuff anyway. So there's only, like, when you're a baby, there's only one thing you're going to do if you grab something. Like, you're grabbing something, it's very instinctive to chuck it in your mouth at that age. So there's not much else they can do with the stuff that they grab. It's going in there.
And the drooling is getting ready for solids as well. So getting ready for solids, they're drooling, their mouth is starting to produce more saliva.
Mm.
And surprisingly, this is not to do with getting teeth. Now, all babies will get teeth at some stage. All babies drool and they will shove things in their mouth around 3-4 months. However, the teeth do not necessarily come at the same stage. I've got a good friend who's a dentist whose child was doing all of this around 3-4 months, and he didn't get teeth until he was one. So you cannot, and even she said it's not teething, because she knew at that point. She's like, no way, you know, this is not teething. So it's a developmental stage that all babies go through, but
let's
not
just
teeth.
Quickly then look at what are the true symptoms of teething. For anybody listening out there going, oh my goodness, I thought my 13-week-old baby was getting teeth. Yeah. When your baby's genuinely teething, this is what you should look for. A tooth.
A tooth. Surprisingly. A tooth.
But you genuinely can see the tooth right about to burst through the gum.
Erupting. So
that's the biggest. I mean, they definitely do draw more. They definitely do ferociously shove stuff in one particular spot in their mouth too. And they'll be like chewing on it. Yeah, they get rosy cheeks. My kids always had nappy rash or diaper rash. Ah. And that is because when they're teething, their saliva is actually more acidic at that time. And they're swallowing the acidic saliva. And then when they wee it out, the wee has a higher acidity and it always causes nappy rash or diaper rash. So that was actually, like, for my kids, I would see the tooth about to come through the gum and I would see diaper rash for a couple of days and that was it. And that's pretty stock standard. They might be a bit grizzly. It's not that major, to be perfectly honest. It's not like when I got my wisdom tooth. That was major. So then I'm going to throw this next one at you too, because this is linked into it. Our old wives' tale about drooling and shoving things in the mouth is always teething. I'm sorry. Old wives. Nah. So old wives' tale number 4 is totally linked to this, is that your teeth, well, your baby's teeth, move around in their mouth and they come up and down.
Oh, yeah.
So I experienced this firsthand because I was that fool who went with my first and I knew literally nothing. I remember she was like 11 weeks old. I'm not kidding. It wasn't even 3 months. And she started doing the drooling and the mouth stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe my 11 week old baby is getting teeth. And lo and behold, no teeth appear. And I remember, I think it might have been my mother-in-law, it was someone in that generation, saying, oh yes, but the teeth move around a lot in their mouth. So it's probably just, it was someone at the rugby club said it. Oh, the teeth are moving around. So it'll just be the teeth moving around will be causing her pain. And I was putting like Bonjela gel in her mouth and all of it, putting her teethers in the freezer to make them cold, thinking my poor baby's in this world of pain because her teeth are moving around. Is that true, Amanda?
No, it's not true, because there is no space. There's no space. Teeth just come up the one time. They don't go up and then down and then up and then down. They just come up and then they come up for good. And that is it. I just love the whole pain thing. It's like, it's just a lovely, convenient excuse, unfortunately. And I think this is where the old wives were.
They didn't know.
Yeah, they didn't know any better. So they needed to have an excuse for something, right? It's just a no, unfortunately. Yeah. There is no space. The teeth don't move up and down. They just come up once. That's it. And teething, like, I get it. It's hard for a couple of days, but if your baby is doing the same sleep thing for weeks and weeks and weeks, it's not the teeth. I can guarantee you it's not the teeth. It's something else.
Nah. Yeah, something else.
All right, old wives' tale number 5. Mm-hmm.
Nikki, what do the old wives say? Yeah, what are they
the
saying?
The old wives say that you should swaddle your baby.
Oh, yeah. This is why I am an old wife, and you also, although I'm a slightly older wife than you, young wife. I tell you this, swaddling is, honestly, it is one of the oldest sleep tricks in the book. In fact, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, babies used to be swaddled onto a plank, like a board, stiff board, across their back, like the board would be up their back and the baby would be swaddled, and the swaddling bands, which is what they used to be called, they would be wrapped around the baby to swaddle the baby's hands down, but also to swaddle the baby onto this hard board. And the theory was that it would that's horrific. I do not recommend that. And their theory was that it would help the baby grow straight and tall and therefore healthy and all of these things. Because I think they mustn't have realized that your spine is supposed to be curved. But anyway, I suppose in those days it was going to prevent your baby being hunched over or I don't know. I don't recommend that these days. In fact, that's probably a form of torture these days. But swaddling in a modern sense using a fitted swaddle, using a swaddle that sort of wraps around and Velcros up, something like that. Some of our favorites are Love to Dream, Swaddle Me, Ergo Pouch. These kind of swaddles are an absolute godsend when it comes to your baby's sleep, especially as a newborn. You just can't argue how effective it is. It helps your baby to calm down, helps your baby to sleep for longer. It helps to stimulate their parasympathetic nervous system, which releases all kinds of calming juices in your little one's body.
So we should maybe clarify too that we don't necessarily mean like the swaddles that are tightly fitted, your baby is in like a straitjacket, which some babies do actually need those.
My babies all loved those ones.
Yeah, and some babies do love those. Mm. There are fitted swaddles out there that if your baby does like a slightly looser swaddle, generally a newborn, I would say, I would recommend a new newborn up until sort of 8 weeks, I would actually recommend to have a pretty fitted tight swaddle. But after that, they do get the movement a bit more smooth and their arms aren't flailing around and whacking themselves
in the face.
They start
to know what they're doing.
They do. So this is where those fitted swaddles, like Nikki was mentioning, the Love to Dreams and the Zip ones and things like that, they do allow a little bit more movement and they do allow the baby's arms to move around. So, you know, it's not like we're saying wrap them up on a board. We're just saying to wrap them so that their arms and their motor reflex don't whack themselves in the face and wake them up, and their startle reflex, because it will wake them up. This is why a few decades ago, all parents were told to keep their babies on their stomach, because when your babies were on their stomach, their arms couldn't actually move around because they were jammed down in the bed. Yeah, so
and there was the pressure. There was that pressure across the whole front of their body, which is what a swaddle replicates. It's the pressure on your torso.
And we know that sleeping on the back is better for safe sleep. So this is where the swaddle can work really well for you. All right.
Yeah, so the old wives did know what they were talking about. As long as we don't swaddle them on a board.
Yeah, let's miss that one. All right, Nikki.
Okay, Amanda. Go.
I was going to just ask you this one. Old wives' tale number six. You can spoil your baby by responding to every cry.
Oh, again, there's that terrible
spoil.
I swear, it's like that old wife generation just was so obsessed with spoiling or not spoiling your baby.
I know.
Somehow we turned out okay. I wonder if we were spoiled by that generation.
Probably.
Well, I wonder if it's the generation above our parents, though, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what? Spoil your baby by responding to every cry. Crikey, that is a pretty loaded old wives' tale. And I genuinely feel sorry for the babies that whose parents were these old wives, because they clearly didn't respond to their baby's cries. So, look, I mean, I would say about this one, if you have a young baby, you should respond to their every cry, because something's probably wrong with them. Like, crying is how your baby is communicating, and especially in those first couple of months, it's the only way that they can say, I'm hungry, I'm cold, I'm uncomfortable, I have wind, I'm tired. Your three-year-old child is going to cry for very different reasons. You know, they're going to cry because you gave them the wrong color plate. You know, that I'm not responding to that cry. Because I gave you the blue plate instead of the red one. But for a small baby, I would expect people to be responding to every cry, because their cries mean something.
So in older babies, though, we definitely need to listen to their cries and figure out what they're doing. Like, are they just grizzling? Are they protest cries? I had a friend whose baby would just wake up and go, wah, 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 and go back to sleep in between every sleep cycle up until about a year old. So, and that was just... That's what he did. He just woke up shouting or do whatever and go back to sleep. So older babies, we need to definitely figure out what their cries mean. And I get it. It's hard. Every cry seems like they're pulling at your heartstrings. But they're different types of cry, which we have to sort of figure out and learn. And I think this is why following a sleep program is fantastic, because you start to understand more about what the cries are. You start to understand, actually, no, I did just feed you, so you aren't hungry, or you did just have a sleep, so you aren't tired, or maybe you're getting close to your sleep time, so you are tired, or whatever. That's just, the knowledge really gives you the power in that situation to help.
It's easier to decipher why they're crying.
Yeah, for
when
sure.
When you know what to expect anyway. But yep, you're not spoiling them. Even then, you're not spoiling your baby, are you? You're just responding to it or reacting to it, or not, if that's what the situation calls for. All right, let's move on from crying.
Okay.
Oh, seven. Old wives' tale number seven.
What is it?
So interestingly, this is something my own mother told me was something she was told, and what she did with my sister and I when we were babies. Feed your newborn every 4 hours around the clock. And so what she was told to do, apparently it was a thing in the early 80s, is you would have, it was like 6, 10, 2, and 6. And
yeah, you would feed times.
Feed them at those times. You would put them back to sleep. You would get them up before the next one, feed them, put them back to sleep. And this was 24 hours a day. So even during the night, as a newborn, you would wake them up every 4 hours and do the feed thing, you know, at 6, 10, 2, and 6. And that's what she said she did with me. And the idea of that was that they would
like regulate, sleep
better, I suppose, be calmer, be more settled. What do you think about that, Amanda? What do you think
this
about that advice?
Routines, this is what, where routines get a really bad rap, because that would have been classified as a routine well. And I think that advice is very outdated and not what I would recommend to do at all. And unless you have been told to wake your baby overnight to feed them by a medical professional, then we would recommend to let your baby sleep, because they are learning
at
that
night,
nighttime is sleeping, and consolidating their night earlier on is going to be better for everybody. But, and during the day, there are times that, you should feed your babies, and we do recommend specific times, but they're sort of more around, you know, lunch.
And also breakfast in general are probably going to be feeding more frequently than 4 hours.
Oh, yeah.
It's an interesting one. But I'll tell you this, though, and that's that the logic of it is quite sound.
It's kind of there.
It's the idea of it. And I can see why it may have worked, because you're setting up a routine. You're setting up body clock triggers the baby's in a predictable, consistent routine every day, and we see in the work that we do how important that is to have a settled baby who knows what's coming next, who's feeding at similar times each day, so their body is responding to that body clock trigger, they're sleeping at similar times each day.
Like, I don't know why the body clock though doesn't really have any triggers. But if the feed times are at the same at night versus the day as well, like, I'm not sure about how I feel about that. I feel like
you don't want those body clock triggers overnight.
No, we don't want them overnight. We want them during the day.
It's an interesting one, eh? Like, I get what the old wives were trying to do with the more limited information that they had at that time around sleep cycles and patterns and sleep neurology and stuff. But I think we're halfway there. It's just, I think they were more working around a routine that suited the parent more so than something that was biologically appropriate for the child, which that's the space we now work in, because we know more so we can do better, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, last one.
Okay. Last one from the old wives. I know you
from
like it when I read you things. Yeah.
Yep.
From one old wife to another.
Yes.
Always give your baby a warm bath before bed to help them sleep better.
Yep.
I like that one.
No, this is a goodie. This one works, and it does work well. So it works in two ways. It works as part of a consistent bedtime routine. It also assists part of your routine. Your baby gets used to having a nice, warm, lovely bath. They get changed, and it works part of that sort of wind down part. Steps in a process before your baby goes to sleep for the night. And it also assists in a core body temperature shift, which helps kick off the biological sleep process of going to sleep. So it works in like that, but a warm bath before bed isn't the magic bullet, and you'll also need to have lots of other things in place to make sure that
it's
your
like
baby does
go to sleep.
Cereal.
It's like the rice cereal, right? If you've got a crap daytime routine and your baby's sleep is all over the place and they're not swaddled and their room is bright and there's no white noise and all of this stuff, which sounds like my worst nightmare, a warm bath is not going to solve it. But if you've got all of that stuff lined up, then a warm bath is definitely a lovely step in the right direction.
And the warm bath too, don't make it always have to happen if your day has gone awry. If your whole day is thrown out because the baby slept late and didn't, or something, they didn't feed or whatever, don't stress that they don't have a bath. Just pop them in their nighttime, their pajamas, and pop them into bed. It would be better to put your baby into bed and not get overtired than have a bath. And I know that I fell into that trap a little bit with my first, thinking that they had to have a bath, that she had to have a bath every night. And it actually sometimes just doesn't work. Don't worry. There's going to be times where your six-year-old doesn't have a bath for like 4 days. Because
probably not 4 days.
Maybe two. But, you know, like, just life happens.
But also
sometimes.
With your little baby, I mean, they're not sweaty or dirty
they don't
have
dirty.
A bath today. It's not a big deal.
But more important that your six-year-old has a bath.
Or your husband, even. A bath, but I do agree with the old wives here. A warm bath before bed can definitely help your baby sleep better. And I really like that. We know why it's going to help your baby sleep better, which is possibly not what the old wives had followed through on that information. They might not have known that a core body temperature shift is required in order to kick off the processes of sleep and help release melatonin and all of that kind of stuff. But they knew it worked for a reason. So definitely they did. They did. Thanks, old wives, for paving the way. In general, you know, a lot of their stuff we have agreed with these days. But it's a classic case of they did the best they could with the situation and the information that they had. I guess the moral of the story is don't believe everything you read or hear out there. And that's probably a general life rule these days anyway, right? I think we've basically summed up the old wives' tales for today. Thank you so much for listening, and please check out our other podcasts because we have a lot more episodes and so much more sleep advice. If you are in need of further help at any time, don't forget you can visit our website at littleones.co, download our apps from your app stores, and we can guide you through any sleep challenge you happen to be facing from there. And in fact, we would love to. So we will see you in the podcast next week. Hopefully also on our social channels, and we will talk to you then. Ciao.
Talk to you in the next one. Bye.
This is Little Ones, the Sleep Manual Podcast.